president of the Colorado chapter of Concerns of Police Survivors. And his son was a New Mexico state trooper that was killed in the line of duty. Donnie, thank you very much for sharing your time with us. Can you maybe share a little bit about your story?
Yes, John. Thank you for allowing me to partake in this endeavor. I feel honored to do so. My story begins in basically June of 2006, June 4th, 2006 to be exact. It was a Sunday. It was a good day for the Archuleta family. One of the things that I do in my part-time work is I am a sports official. So that particular day, I had the honor of doing a high school all-star game at Coors Field. And that was pretty special. My parents were there and had a couple nephews there to watch. And also what was going on in New Mexico that day is my son's oldest daughter was having her first Holy Communion. So they were celebrated in New Mexico as well. James, at the time, was working a swing shift. So, and in fact, he called into work a couple hours later than normal so he could spend some additional time with his daughter and his family in New Mexico. The way I understand what happened that day is shortly after James went on duty, probably around 6:30 or 7 p.m., he was called to a small town about 20 miles from Espanola, where he was stationed. Espanola, for those of you that don't know, is about 20 miles north of Santa Fe. It's not a big town, maybe 10,000 people or so. And he was called to a smaller town that had some problems at a horse track. Apparently there was a shooting over there. It seemed to take, from what I understand, himself, a couple other New Mexico State Police officers, and some other local sheriffs were at that scene for about 3 hours before they cleared everybody and finished their preliminary investigation there. It was about 10:20 p.m. James was scheduled to be off at 10, but they got a call in of there was a shooting victim who was at the Espanola Hospital, which was about 15 miles from where James was at. They asked James to do the call, and being the dutiful person he was, he said sure, even though he was supposed to have been off work. For those of you who have traveled through northern New Mexico, the roads are very rural. They're mostly single lane. They're very dark. Sometimes there's lots of curves. And on this particular highway, Highway 84, that runs from Espanola to Chama, New Mexico, there's virtually no lighting whatsoever. James began his call to Espanola. 3 miles from where he was at, we're not exactly sure of the time frame, but the investigators feel it was just several minutes, somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes before James got to this particular location, that a car had hit a cow in the head. The cow was kind of standing on the side of the road. The cow stumbled and died right in the middle of the lane. And as James came around this right-hand corner, he ran over the cow with the bottom of the patrol car. We know from the investigation that James never saw the cow because there was no skid marks, but he did hit his brakes because the shock lights had burnt.
Right.
So as, and we know he was traveling at a high rate of speed, and I've come to learn that the reason for that was, I guess, police officers, when there is a shooting victim, they need to get to that victim as soon as possible in case for witness purposes and declaration of death purposes and that type of thing. So I've kind of come to understand that there is a strong sense of urgency to get to a shooting victim. So as James starts to drag this cow under his patrol car. His car begins to list to the left side, the driver's side. He skids for, I don't remember, several, you know, maybe 100 feet. The details are a little sketchy in my mind because it's been now almost 4 years, but he flips once after going on the left side for probably about 75 or 100 feet. The car flips and becomes airborne. When it contacts the ground about another 100 feet away, it flips again. At that point, James is ejected from the car, and his body goes into the opposite lane and rolls several hundred feet. The car once again hits the ground and flips once again and ends up on the right side of the road, on its wheels, and up against a hill. The whole length of the accident is a little bit less than 900 feet. So that's three football lengths.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty violent and horrific accident. And we know from the police report and in the autopsy that James did not suffer. He was killed immediately when he was ejected. So I got a call about 1:20 in the morning from his fiance, and she gave me the grim news. And this is where it gets a little tough for me. The next few hours, my role, because I'm the oldest son, was to call my parents and my brothers and sisters and James's stepmother and, you know, those people that have had an impact on his life here in Colorado. So by the time I was able to gather myself and pack my clothes and try to drive to New Mexico, which from my house at that point was roughly a six-hour drive. There's really no way to fly. I mean, there is, but it would have taken longer to fly than it would to drive. So my brother, my younger brother, who happens to be an Arapaho County sheriff, volunteered to ride with me. And it turned out to be a big blessing that he was able to accompany me on that trip. So we got to New Mexico probably around 10 a.m. My two daughters, I greeted them there at James's mother's house. And, of course, it was very emotional for everybody. Just the absolute shock of it all. And, you know, James was 27 years old. He was a Marine reservist. He'd already done one tour in Iraq. And, you know, he was just overall a pretty tough little guy. And so it was kind of overwhelming that this, you know, could happen to him. I was able to finally catch up with his fiance probably around 11:30 or 12. And, you know, there was just a lot of business to take care of. The next day we made the arrangements for the funeral. James's mom and I have been divorced probably, when did we get divorced? 1983, I believe. So it was there was a little bit of uncomfortableness, if that's the right way to say it. But, you know, we were able to put aside our personal differences and take care of what needed to be taken care of. The funeral, which took place on Wednesday night was a rosary, and they had to hold it at the local high school because no church in that small town could accommodate the large crowd. Thursday, the day of the funeral, was a very, very long and at times a very honorable day, but at the end of the day, it turned out that it was also a very difficult day. I was in awe because I'd never been to a police funeral. I was in awe of the procession. I was in awe of the way that the strangers would stand on the side of the road, and some men were saluting with tears in their eyes. And from the small town where they did the funeral called Chimayo, New Mexico, to the Santa Fe National Cemetery was about 15 miles. And by our estimate, there was over 250 police vehicles. Mm-hmm. And he's honorably buried at the National Cemetery in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I had not heard of cops, obviously, until that happened. Mm-hmm. We were approached at the funeral home, I think, on either Tuesday or Wednesday by Cheryl Schultz, who is the president of the New Mexico chapter. And she told us that, you know, next year you will be have the opportunity to be honored in Washington. And she gave us a little bit of a briefing. She didn't talk to us too much. Maybe 10 minutes, she gave us her card and said, you know, that she would be in touch with us, you know, down the road. And I thought that was a very, well, it touched me. It made me know that immediately that there are people out there who understand and have gone through what they were going through. So I contacted Colorado cops when I got back, probably about 3 months after that, 3 or 4 months after that. I don't know who I initially contacted. I want to believe I contacted Don Enlow via email. Mm-hmm. Told him who I was and a little bit about our story. And he said that, you know, we were welcome, I was welcome to attend a meeting or something like that. And at the time, I was unemployed except for my officiating jobs. Mm-hmm. And I had told him, well, you know, maybe after a year's gone by or so, I'll contact you again and see, you know, if I may have a role in this organization or not and see if it's for me. And they also were, Colorado also was very generous to give me a little bit of money. I believe they gave me $300 to help with a D.C. trip. And New Mexico pitched in as well. And so as 2007 rolled along and we were planning the trip to D.C., there ended up being 23 representatives in D.C., four teams. There was about a dozen of us from Colorado and another 12 or 13 from New Mexico. And, you know, none of us knew what to expect. I had not even seen a video. I had only gone to maybe the national website once or twice. We really didn't have any briefings per se on, you know, what to wear, what not to wear, what to take, what not to take. We knew about the schedule of events, and, you know, that was pretty much it. So and everybody was, you know, doing different types of travel arrangements. We didn't have the chance to travel together. So just the worry about, you know, hopefully everybody made it there safe and sound and was able to get to D.C. hassle-free. That was a big concern, and I know I felt some anxiety about that. And one of the things that I would tell survivors that are going for the first time is that's a very normal feeling, yeah, to feel that anxiety, especially if you're going with a large group. And even if you're not, because you don't know what to expect. And one of the first thing is obviously that happens in D.C. is you get off the plane. The D.C. Police Department is there to greet you. They're there to assist you with your luggage. They're there to escort you to the buses and allow them to do their job. That's what I would say for the ones that are going there the first year. They're very respectful. They're very honored to be there to assist survivors. And I think, from what I could tell, they take great pride in having that responsibility because they're not in their typical everyday police uniforms. They're in their dress police uniforms. Their shoes are shined. Their belt buckles are polished. Their brass is polished. They'll have white gloves on. And for them, it's a very formal and honorable duty. And I would encourage survivors to allow them to assist you in any way you need assistance. And they will be glad to do so. We then, once you're on the bus and, you know, you wait for the bus to fill up, they're not the big over-the-road buses. They're maybe 20-passenger buses. So you're not going to wait a long time on the bus. And then you're going to be escorted to your hotel via a police motorcycle motorcade. That is pretty awesome. But it will bring back those memories of the procession that you witnessed when, you know, your police officer had their service. So be prepared to feel that emotion again and know it's okay to feel that emotion because everybody on that bus is feeling it with you. And I think my sister-in-law took a video. No, actually, she wasn't there at that time. My brother tried to take a video, but he was having some problems with his camera.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing I would say is if you have access to video cameras, maybe have two. If you want to videotape that, because it is something to cherish. It really is. And then you arrive at the hotel. You know, the check-in process can be a little difficult just because there's so many people arriving at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, just be patient. From what I witnessed, we didn't have any problems with our rooms or check-in or anything other than that it took a while. I know some other people were having some difficulties. You know, their rooms were not available. Those types of issues. So maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea a day or two before have somebody from your party just call the hotel and make sure that everything is okay. You know, I didn't see too many people having problems, but it could be. And understand D.C. is a very busy place at that time of year.
Yeah.
So if you happen to drive your own vehicle, it's going to be tough to get around, just unless you know the D.C. area. But take advantage of the shuttles that are available to you. One of the things that happened on May 15th, the day of the service, it's also one of my granddaughter's birthday, and this happened to be her 7th birthday. So after everything was done that day, my daughter and her family was staying at another hotel, and the shuttles quit going maybe around 5 or 6, and we had talked to some police officers at our hotel and said, you know, can we get a ride back? Otherwise, we're not going to be able to go to her birthday party. And they said, sure. They said, an officer gave me her business card and said, you just call me when you're ready and I'll come pick you up. If I'm not at that hotel, I'll come pick you up. cool. and bring you back to your hotel. And that's exactly what she did. So the officers that are there to assist you. And once again, once you're at the hotel, they're going to be from different departments, but they are there for you. And take advantage of their kindness.
Yeah.
Because it makes them feel proud, and you can see in their face and in their demeanor when they are able to assist you. As far as the police week itself, the candlelight vigil, I don't remember what day it is this year. I want to say it's Thursday. When we went, the candlelight vigil was on a Tuesday, and the service was the very next day. So we had a very late night for the candlelight vigil, and then a very long day for the service on May 15th. I would urge everybody to get as much rest as you possibly can on May 14th. I know some people want to go sightseeing. I recommend that you don't, because then it's just you're trying to cram too much into an already crowded week. Definitely take advantage of the seminars. I know the first seminar I went to, I actually went with my dad because they don't have a grandfather or grandparent seminars. So I asked my dad to go with me to the fathers who had lost a child in an accident. And I was very impressed with the fathers that were there and the willingness to share their story. And I can remember one gentleman, and I've met him on a couple other occasions since, a parents retreat and board training and those types of things. His son was killed 12, 13, 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still bitter about that, and he was very honest about that. And he himself is a retired police officer. And it made me realize that it's okay to have these feelings of loss and grief and even anger and disappointment and all those emotions that we've all felt since the loss of our officer. It's okay to have those. And I immediately felt comfortable in that room, knowing that here I am as the first-year survivor. It had been 11 months since the accident, and a man who has had 12 years to deal with this is feeling the exact same thing that I'm feeling. And it's okay to share those feelings, and I would encourage every survivor that goes to these seminars to go and share and listen and learn and take something from that. You will take something from those seminars that you will use the rest of your life. And I really believe that. Even if it's just one thing that somebody said, if it's one idea that somebody gave you as to what they do when they're feeling, when they're having a bad day, you will take something from every seminar you go to. So I definitely encourage you to go to as many of them as you can, and there are plenty, and that's why they want you to get there 2 days before or 3 days before the service on May 15th, is to take advantage of those seminars because they are very healing.
Yeah.
I would also encourage you to, if you have not met somebody from your home state who is a member of COPS, to find somebody from your home state. If nobody is there from your home state, talk to, you know, anybody that you know is a COPS member and find out who that regional, that regional president is.
Mm-hmm.
In our region, Colorado, we have 9 states, and our regional director lives in Minnesota. And I know the regional directors will all be there. So even if you can't find somebody from your state, find and talk to your regional person. And again, if you need anything additional, if you have some questions, concerns, that person will get you to the person that will most be able to help you. So what I'm really saying is take advantage of the people that are there, because they were all first-year survivors at one time as well. And they completely understand what you're going through. And they completely relate to what you're going through. And I know at one time we were a little confused about what time we were going to catch the bus, I think, to go to the candlelight vigil.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to find Cheryl Schultz from New Mexico, and I said, we're not really sure where to go. She literally took me by the hand and said, you go over here. And she walked me to where we needed to be.
Wow.
And that's the kind of assistance you'll find with the COPS members. May 15th, if you are one of the first-year survivors that is going to sit in the designated area for the ceremony, when we were there, it was about 80 degrees.
Hmm.
And we were in the conference room at 8 o'clock in the morning because they line you up. How do they do it? I'm not exactly sure how they do it, but they line you up in a very specific order, because when your loved one goes up to place the carnation in the flower circle, they want it done in an orderly way, because there will be an MC who will announce your officer's name and, you know, what state they're from and those types of things. So just be prepared for a very long day. At the Capitol, there's no water, so make sure that you have plenty of water for whomever is going to be there that day. Make sure you prepared for changes in weather. We were, like I said, when we were there, it was pretty much 80, 85 degrees all day. No clouds. It got a little hot, to say the least.
Yeah.
So, you know, with anything to keep you cool, umbrellas, you know, the little water bottles that have the little fan, definitely sunscreen, sunglasses, lotions. You're even going to want some snacks. You know, you'll probably have breakfast in the morning. But then there's no food available until you're done with the ceremony. And when we were there, President Bush was there. He shook hands with every family. So the ceremony did not end probably after 5 p.m. Again, it's a very long day. It's a very honorable day. It's also a very difficult day. And all I can say is be prepared as much as you can, knowing that, you know, you're going to be there for several hours, possibly. I know I've heard other ceremonies have not lasted that long. I guess last year it rained all day. So you would want to be prepared for dealing with that element as well.
Yeah.
You know, raincoats, umbrellas. You know, definitely you're going to be sitting on the grass. You'll be in seats, but they're on a grassy area. So if it's going to be wet, you know, it might not hurt to throw in some extra socks, you know, little things like that. If you're a person who's prone to get cold when it gets wet, you know, definitely some light gloves, hats, whatever you need to get through that day. Because there's, from what I understand, unless it's an emergency, they're not going to let you leave once the ceremony starts. And if you're going there as an observer of the ceremony, there's no chairs. You know, like the fold-up lawn chairs that we all have, they do not allow that. So you're going to be standing all day. So if you have blankets to throw down on the ground to sit on, you know, you may want to have some of those types of things. I definitely encourage, if you have a large group, to ride together on the bus. Because you're the ones that, if you're an observer, you're the ones that are going to get on the bus first. Okay?
Yeah.
Because it's going to be, they want everybody that's observing there, and then the survivors come in later, and because you walk through, when your family walks through, if you're the honoree family, all the police officers that are lining the walkway will be saluting you. So there is definitely some ceremony to this event. Again, if you're an observer, understand your day is going to be a little bit longer than it is for the survivor out in the element. So, you know, be prepared for, you know, whatever, for all possibilities. That includes rain, sunshine, you know, wetness. Definitely if, you know, you're not a person who can stand up all day, you know, bring a blanket, as I said. Wear shoes that are not going to hurt your feet at the end of the day or even in the middle of the day. And just know that this is your day. Even though it's a long day, it's a very honorable day. This day is designed to honor you, the first-year survivor. That's what this day is for. It's also to honor your officer. But this day is mostly about you. And take pride in that. And accept the fact that the people that are there, the officers that are there to honor you. One of the great things that I was presented with, well, after we had met the president, you know, he was meeting other families. So there was a break in the ceremony for us, probably of a couple of hours. And the California State Patrol, I know he's a higher ranking patrol officer, I can't his name, but he found me outside the rope. He called me over and they presented me with, what's the word I'm looking for, John? Like a plaque.
Okay.
You know, something like that.
I can remember.
And it was in a nice folder, you know, mm-hmm. honoring, you know, my son, who was also a state patrol officer. So, and it's my understanding that they do that for every state police officer or trooper that perishes in the line of duty. So it just felt very honorable that these strangers from California would take the time to seek me out and honor me.
That's cool.
And I know if I saw that man walking in downtown Denver, I'd recognize him immediately.
Wow.
So those types of things are going to happen. Accept them with grace, with dignity, and with honor. And I think if you're able to understand that this is a once-in-a-lifetime event designed specifically for you, to honor you, I think you'll find it very rewarding. Sure, it's going to be emotional. It's going to be very emotional at times. But it's also a very rewarding experience. Hmm. And that's about all I have to say about D.C. The other thing I would say, after you get back from D.C., when you get back to your normal daily life, whether it be a week or two after, expect to hit a little bit of a lull. Because you're going to be overwhelmed with that whole week. It really is surreal at times. But somewhere down the road, and everybody's different, it may be a few weeks for some, maybe a few months for some. For me, it was the next year. It was about a year later that week. I once again went back to everything that had happened, you know, in that 2 year period. So just be prepared for that emotionally, you know, and if you have to go talk to somebody, go talk to somebody. You know, if you've made a cop's friend, call that person. That's what they're there for, is to help you get through your tough moments. And that's part of why I joined Colorado Cops. I first went to the Colorado Cops picnic that summer of 07. So this was maybe a couple of months after Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. There was only a handful of people there. And I thought Colorado had a bigger chapter. And at that time, I knew that there needed to be more involvement. And I felt very compelled to become involved. And I listened to the advice of somebody that I had talked to in Washington that said, if you're thinking about being on in a state chapter, wait at least 2 years, maybe even three from the accident before you become involved. National says 1 year. I think that's too early for most people. I think 2 to 3 years after your police officer has perished in the line of duty, if you feel compelled, that's a good time to become involved. And I first was elected a trustee in November of 07, and there are two-year terms, and this past November of 09, I became our vice president. And Kelly Young, who is our president also, that's when she became president. So we have been doing some really fantastic things here in Colorado, and I feel very proud to be part of Colorado Cops. Even though my son was a New Mexico State police officer, he lived here till he was about 15 years old. So his Colorado connection is very strong. Mm-hmm. And I know that, well, for me, what I get out of it is it's a way to continue his legacy. It's a way to honor his life. And it's also a way for me to heal for myself. And I'm getting a lot of reward out of being part of this organization. I'm looking forward to even becoming more involved and feeling more rewards and helping other survivors get through whatever it is they're going through and helping them understand that, you know, you're not alone. And if I may regress just a little bit, my first parents' retreat I went to was, well, this would have been October of 07. And once again, being a first-year parent, so to speak, this was my first time at parents' retreat. Again, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how to think, I didn't know how I was supposed to act. I didn't know how I was supposed to be. And I remember a gentleman He's from Delaware, and his name escapes me off the top of my head. He came up to me, because I'd been there about 2 hours and hadn't really talked to anybody. He came up to me and shook my hand, put his arms around me, and with tears in his eyes, he said, "Welcome, and feel proud of yourself for being here." And I had come to find out that he lost his son about 5 years before. So we understand what you're going through. We get it.
Yeah.
And any time that I can be of assistance to somebody who is a survivor, I cherish that opportunity. And I hope this little interview will help you understand that you're not alone. There are thousands of people who have experienced a very similar loss. I will never say it's exactly the same, because it's not exactly the same for everybody. But it's as close to being the same for everybody as it can possibly be. And I want to thank Mr. Marks for giving me this opportunity to speak to you today. And if you would like to get in touch with me, again, my name is Don Archuleta. I'm the Vice President of Colorado COPS. You can do so through our ColoradoCOPS.org website. And again, thank you for your time.
Donnie, thank you for your time, and thank you for your service to survivors everywhere. We appreciate all the work you're putting in, and it really does make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marks, and you have a great day.